Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All right, let's get this thing rolling on a Friday, going to the weekend in style. Myrtle Beach head coach Mickey Wilson joins us at 5:40. His Seahawks 3-0 in Region 7 3A right now. They can clinch a share of the region title by beating Georgetown tonight. But those Bulldogs are pretty darn good. We'll get his take on how to stop Georgetown's dual-threat quarterback, I just had a total brain fart.
Jarvis Brown.
Jarvis Brown, yes, sir. Thank you, Brian. I nailed the question in the interview, though. Spoiler alert, it's pre-recorded. That's coming up at 5:40. And we're going to start here with a Louisville story. It keeps on getting more and more entertaining, to be honest with you. Not surprising that Rick Pitino is digging his trench. He's in his 60s. He's in legacy mode. He's got two national championships. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He doesn't want anybody to take from him what he's already earned. And he doesn't want to go out Paterno-esque, forced to resign amid scandal. The guy wants to go out on his own terms. And as we've just seen with the ball coach, a lot of times coaches and athletes, heck, you can throw Peyton Manning into this category. Coaches and athletes are often the last people to find out that their time has passed them. And on the court, Rick Pitino still has it. I mean, they won the national championship in 2013. And this story involving his players and prospects and strippers slash prostitutes, the gray area there. I mean, what is an escort? Another odd word that can confuse us. He has basically walled off the media and stopped talking about this. He has said in a personal blog post that he is not going to resign. And he is also, get this, he is skipping ACC media days. And I find this very, very problematic. So, first of all, if somebody accused me of something I didn't do, I would deny it until I were blue in the face. I would not be dodging media if I were in Rick Pitino's shoes and I had nothing to hide. But the real problem with this, in my opinion, 843-652-3776, is that Louisville will be sending coach and player representatives to ACC Media Days. And since Rick Pitino isn't there, journalists will ask his assistant coach and his two players about the scandal, how it's going to impact the season, whether they saw Katina Powell, whether they paid for escorts, all of that stuff, how close they were to Andre McGee, the now disgraced graduate assistant who looks at the very least like he was involved in it. If that's the end of it for Louisville, then they're probably in better shape than a lot of people think, but it's hard to believe things didn't go at least one level above him. But the players and the assistant coach are going to have to face these heat rounds. Rick Pitino, if you were going to say that you had nothing to do with this, and you are going to remain coaching at the University of Louisville, have the balls and go to ACC Media Days, look everybody in the eye, and handle every variation of question about that event that you possibly could. Just writing a personal blog post and saying, guess what, guys, I didn't have anything to do with this, and I'm not going to ACC Media Days, that's unacceptable. I mean, then don't bring your team at all to ACC Media Days. If you're just going to go bunker mentality and say, oh, I'm focusing on the season, I'm going to let this investigation take place, and then I'll get back to you because I knew nothing about it now, we're going to have to wait till the investigation. That's his angle. And while, and we discussed this with JC, with Sam, with several callers on Wednesday, it's possible that he didn't know. It's possible. But at the same time, it happened under his roof, and he should be allowed I shouldn't say he should allow the media to ask him questions about it. If he's got nothing to hide, why isn't he answering questions? And his players and his coaches will be asked those very same questions. So he is hiding and using guys beneath him essentially as human shield for all of these media-related heat rounds. And I can understand maybe there's nothing to be gained by him having to answer the question 50 times in 50 different ways. Then just don't show up at all to ACC Media Days. Unless you're going to get fined by the conference office, what are they going to do, kick Louisville out of the ACC? I just think it sends a really terrible message. Like, I'm fine. If Rick Pitino doesn't want to resign and he says, you know, hey, I was hands-off old guy, I'll let the young men on the staff do the recruiting because I can't reach kids these days. If that's the old aloof card that he's going to play with regard to this entire scandal, if that's his move, then at least go to Media Days and talk about it. Don't put that on other people. I think that's really messed up. And just hearkening back to what Katina Powell said, it's pretty conspicuous what they were doing.
This is my theory. 4 years, a boatload of recruits, a boatload of dancers, loud music, alcohol, security, cameras, basketball players who came in at will. You got players that are so loyal to Pitino. Who wouldn't go back and be like, hey, you know, we got dancers and sex and all that going on. My thing is, how could he not know?
How could he not know? And this is developing into one of my favorite types of scandal because it's almost one of these things. And I feel bad for the current Louisville players. They're the ones, the ones that say maybe had nothing to do with getting recruited by strippers, if there's any of them in the program that were innocent in this. I mean, who knows? Maybe everybody on the assistant coaching staff knew about it. Maybe every player took part in these recruiting visits. I don't know. But if there's somebody on that roster that had nothing to do with this and committed to Louisville for the right reasons or is coaching the right way and for the right reasons, then I feel bad in the off chance that there is an innocent or two in this mix. But this is shaping up to be a situation where everybody is having to deal with inconvenient stuff because of, in large part, things that they deserve. And where I'm going with this is a really, like, you hear the term frivolous lawsuit a lot, like, oh, this happens in America, another frivolous lawsuit. Can't believe somebody's suing a fast food company for how hot the coffee was. I mean, that kind of, you see a lawsuit and you roll your eyes like it's the first thing that pops up on your browser when you open up your webpage. This is going to take the cake. A student at the University of Louisville has sued Katina Powell and has tried to, in her lawsuit, gather the profits from the stripper/madam tell-all book called Breaking Cardinal Rules that has started all of this. She wants the profits from the stripper's book to basically be given to Louisville students in a class action suit because the disgrace that Louisville is facing right now is devaluing her degree, which she is currently paying for. Are you kidding me? Your degree and your subsequent career following getting your degree is 100% what you make of it. Now, if you go to Harvard and you go to a junior college, then employers are going to treat you different ways in the application process. But 10 years, 15 years down the road, that really does not matter. Education is 100% what you make of it. I went to a university that's ranked in all the top 50 lists in U.S. News and World Reports, is considered a great school, and I saw some of my teammates get a horrific education. I saw one of my teammates, you know, just show up late to every class possible, skate by, get a 2.0 in 5 years, and forgot to apply to graduate. And 6 months later, when he asked for his diploma, people were confused. Like, wait a second, who are you? And that's an elite, you know, air quotes, elite university. There were ways at that, air quotes, elite university where you could get a terrible education. Everybody knows there are soft majors in ways where you can totally be uninvested. You cannot sit in the front of the class. You cannot ask questions. You cannot do your work. You can do poorly on tests. You cannot network. There are a million and one ways to leverage an education for you or just be disinterested. It's not like because you go to a certain school, all of these opportunities are going to be afforded to you. And this Louisville student is arguing that she and her future is going to have fewer opportunities afforded to her because the great name of Louisville is disgraced by basketball players getting recruited by strippers. That is the most ridiculous lawsuit that I have ever heard of. Are Penn State students suing Penn State because of Jerry Sandusky? Are they suing Jerry Sandusky? I mean, every university at some point in time is going to have some degree of scandal. And you as an individual, it's up to you to make your own career. Like, maybe that on that very first job that you have, maybe the degree on your diploma, maybe some things open up doors for you. But at the end of the day, you are who you are, and education is what you make of it. Your skill set is what you have forged over time. It's not just having that name on a sheet of paper. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, honestly, my degrees, plural, mean jack you know what for this job that I have, this microphone that I'm talking into. Some of the biggest names in my profession do not have college degrees. This is a self-taught business. And this idea, like what, am I going to sue Darren Sharper? Hey, Darren, you went to William & Mary and turned out to be a disgusting human being, and I'm ashamed that I'm an alum like you are, and you've devalued my career. No, that's just not legit. But here's why, as ridiculous as it is, and it's sure to lose in court. I'm not legal analyst guy, but I just see no way, shape, or form that the stripper's profits from her book sales get divided up to Louisville students in a class action suit. Here's why I don't mind this. Because it forces the stripper, lady, madam, Katina Powell, who is a terrible human being, to face legal action. Like, she actually has to lawyer up and spend some time sweating this out. So I see it as kind of like a cluster of a bunch of people getting what they deserve in some way, shape, or form. Like, that lawsuit's not going to stand up. But keep in mind, this is the woman who accepted money from Andre McGee, took extensive documentation so she could put the knife in his back by releasing a tell-all memoir to try to take down a coach who she never met, and in the process prostituted out her own two daughters to Louisville basketball players. So I have no sympathy for anything that comes to Katina Powell. If she makes money off of it, that's cool. If she goes to jail because someone in that prostitution ring was a 17-year-old minor on a recruiting visit, that's cool with me. If she has to lawyer up to protect herself in court from this frivolous lawsuit, that's cool with me. I mean, she gets what she deserves in any way, shape, or form. I just don't think that legally that has any standing. 843-652-3776. Thoughts on the lawsuit, thoughts on Rick Pitino dodging ACC Media Days.
Well, on an additional note to the Rick Pitino dodging it, Andre McGee just resigned from his job at University of Missouri, Kansas City, saying, oh, they deserve a full-time assistant coach that can focus on it. Who says that? Like, who quits their job if they think the things are false?
Well, yeah, McGee hasn't denied any of this stuff.
Well, in his statement today, he said the university deserves a full-time assistant coach, and I'm not able to provide that to the basketball team while the false allegations against me are being investigated.
Okay, so he is denying it. But it's funny because Louisville's not denying that any of this stuff happened.
Yeah.
Rick Pitino is just denying that he knew about it, and he's denying that his staff knew about it. Louisville's card that they are playing, no pun intended, the card that they are playing is that this was a rogue graduate assistant who just on his own found $10,000 to hire strippers / escorts. That's what they are saying happened. And that Southeast Missouri State, Kansas Tech community, whatever, that he was coaching at, clearly doesn't want him associated with their university.
Yeah.
843-652-3776. Coming up next segment, going to stay here in the realm of college basketball. One of the most respected voices, if not the most respected journalist covering the NBA today, goes scorched earth on Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski. We'll fill you in next.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
A lot of college basketball on a football Friday, but very interesting stories. Have to admit, did not see Rick Pitino skipping media days coming, just because it forces other people to answer questions for him. I think that's not a great thing. I think if you are getting paid millions of dollars to be the face of a program, you should face the heat rounds as a result of A, your negligence, or B, potential criminal activity.
How ironic would it be if one of the guys that went in his place was like, yeah, Rick Pitino knew.
Yeah, he knew about it. You can't handle the truth. He knew about it. He knew the entire time. 843-652-3776 is the number. And Adrian Wojnarowski writes for Yahoo Sports. He is the NBA writer, and I guess it's hard to measure respect, but he's the guy that breaks stories first. Like, 9 times out of 10, if during free agency period, he's the one who figures out where somebody's going. He gets all of the great scoops, and generally that means that he has great relationships with all the front offices, right? Nobody's feeding him bad information because they like the guy and they respect him. Could not be better at his job. Like, maybe the best guy covering the NBA. This is very surprising to me, some of the things he has to say about Mike Krzyzewski in his column today. Greg Popovich will replace Coach K as the head coach for Team USA basketball moving forward. And what Wojnarowski says here is basically that Coach K has used and will continue to use Team USA as a recruiting platform for Duke. And that's something that a lot of people in the Triangle area have been up in arms at for a long time, because Duke's recruiting has picked up in the last 3 or 4 years. And people say, hey, that's because he's palling around with LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Carmelo Anthony, gets to say that he coached those guys. Those guys can, you know, LeBron James says, hey, if I would have gone to college, I would have played for Coach K. Things like that, that helps in recruiting, right? But you know what else helps in recruiting? Having a fistful of rings. So, I mean, you can't just say Mike Krzyzewski gets players because he runs Team USA. It can't hurt him, but it's an opportunity that he earned through being an excellent head coach. And if he were just a recruiter, if he were just the guy in MasterCard commercials that didn't know one thing about coaching, well, he wouldn't be winning championships as often as he does. So I have no problem with him getting excellent recruits as a byproduct of being the head coach of Team USA, and I have no doubt that that is a platform that helps recruiting, right? If you're a 16-year-old kid, and not only do you get to watch Duke North Carolina games on TV, where Cameron Indoor Stadium is going bonkers, not only do you get to see the guy in March cutting down nets, but you also get to see him standing next to LeBron wearing a Team USA jersey with his hand on his lower back telling him what to do when he goes in the game. That's a powerful image for recruiting. And what Adrian Wojnarowski has said here, I'm just going to read this directly, quote, Krzyzewski will finish his third tour as national coach in 2016 and stay on as a special advisor, which loosely translated means this. Krzyzewski will still have access and influence to use USA Basketball's junior national teams to leverage his Duke recruiting. High school players committing to Duke understand they have a preferred path to these under-18 and under-19 rosters competing in international tournaments. Krzyzewski will no longer be able to get a Mason Plumlee on the World Cup team with Popovich as coach, but rest assured, Krzyzewski will fully be behind the appointment of an NBA coach as his successor. Out of loyalty to Krzyzewski, Colangelo would never afford another college coach that influence as long as Krzyzewski stayed at Duke. So Wojnarowski is going a step further and saying, this isn't just Coach K enjoying the benefits of being Team USA coach. This is him essentially using that power to make sure his recruits, freshmen and sophomores, get on the Team USA 18 and under and 19 under teams that compete internationally, that get to travel and get Team USA swag, which is pretty cool. And he also blatantly says that Mason Plumlee shouldn't have been on the Team USA senior squad in the World Cup. And I think we can all look at that roster decision and say, really?
And he's also implying that he's blocking other college coaches from getting the job and affecting their recruiting. So they just give it to an NBA coach, which obviously would not affect Coach K very much.
Correct. That they wouldn't want a Tom Izzo or a Roy Williams or a Rick Pitino or a Coach Cal, someone in his stratosphere. Well, actually, Coach K is all alone, let's be honest. But someone that is of the upper tier of college coaching, he would not want someone to be afforded the same benefits that he just received. And that's why Popovich and not another college coach is named his successor. Now, that one's a little more of a reach. Maybe Wojnarowski, and like I said, his sourcing is impeccable. He is right every time, and he is right before anybody else. He is that one guy in reporting whose stories that, like, I don't even, like, I just like, oh, that happened, really? Okay, interesting. But let's not act like Greg Popovich wasn't next in line, right? I mean, Greg Popovich has 5 championships in the NBA, and frankly, the head coach of Team USA probably should be an NBA coach because he is getting to see all of these personnel in an 82-game regular season over and over and over again. He is more aware of the emerging Team USA talent, the Kawhi Leonards, the DeMarcus Cousins, the Paul Georges. He's facing those guys right and left, so he would, in his mind, have a better idea of how they fit into a Team USA roster, especially considering that elite-level talent, that's not staying in coaching, that's not staying in college beyond 1 year. So in the off chance that Kay either coached or saw one of those guys, it wouldn't be the same as seeing them over and over again in an NBA regular season or playoff situation. And these guys are just older. And I mean, Coach K has proven that he can communicate and lead and coach with any group of players at any stage of the game. But you take someone like Tom Izzo, who's a major hard ass. Could you imagine a bunch of NBA players, you know, that are pampered millionaires that are 30 having this college coach yell at him until he's blue in the face about intensity on defense? They're probably like, yeah, this is a paid vacation. Where's my gold medal? Shut up, little man. I mean, honestly, that's probably what they're like. There's an art to coaching big-time prospects like that. And there's a reason why Izzo's not getting the Jabari Parker one-and-done level talent right now. I mean, it's just his MO. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. He's also made a lot of other players into successful pros that maybe didn't have that same pedigree. I mean, he's gotten teams to the Final Four that didn't have Kansas, North Carolina, Duke talent because of the way he coaches hard and coaches up. But Team USA is a collection of superstars, and I don't know that they receive coaching that way.
I just don't understand why Wojnarowski is so upset or fuming against Coach K. It's not like he earned the position. I mean, obviously there's great benefits that come with that position, but it's not like he pulled a Calipari and went to a country where he really has no ties to and coached their national team just to get a player to come to his school.
Yeah, mentioning Karl-Anthony Towns of the Dominican. That was a slick move that Coach Cal pulled. We expect nothing less from Coach Cal.
And I don't even have
Coach
a problem
Cal.
With that because he's benefiting those players. And right. If it helps him, then it helps him.
Here's the beef that a lot of people have. And again, I don't mind this at all. Even as a North Carolina fan, I don't mind this at all because I do look at it as something that he has earned. But the Team USA coach has traditionally been a one Olympic cycle coach, and then you give the honor to somebody else. And Coach K got it in 2008. He renewed for 2012 and said he wasn't going to do it after that, and then he decided to do it again in 2016. Now, how much of that is love for his country? You know, the man did serve in our military. He did graduate and coach for West Point. I mean, it's possible that he just is a good patriot and enjoys doing it.
Or the best qualified person.
The best qualified person. You can also argue that having the same head coach over several Olympic cycles is better for continuity. The players know what they're getting. He knows how to build a roster. I think that was one of the problems, is that between 1992, when our dream team just annihilated everybody, and 2004, when they finally went to Athens and got a bronze medal, they were just changing out the roster every 2 years and coming in with a new coach and treating it like a vacation where they got a gold medal. I think Coach K did a good job of creating a environment in which they took competing seriously and keeping personnel more consistent. I mean, LeBron and Kobe, those guys played multiple Olympics. Back in the day, they wouldn't, right? The guys that were on the dream team in 92 were not on the team in 96. So I think that's necessary to keep up with the Joneses in international basketball. But there's two ways that you can look at this. I mean, you can look at it, and you know what? They're not mutually exclusive. Coach K can be a good patriot, and he can be the best man for the job, and he can also say, you know, Maybe I don't get Jabari Parker. Maybe I don't get Tyus Jones if I'm not coaching Team USA. Maybe this is helping me get one-and-done talent. Maybe this is helping me get Austin Rivers. I just, again, and Brian, you and I are on the same page. I mean, the man's earned it. But I did, like I said, not expecting whatsoever Adrian Wojnarowski to for doing what he does. I mean, he's not a columnist. Like, this is not someone like Jason Whitlock who you expect fiery hot takes from. This is a dude who's a well-respected reporter. I mean, that's a bombshell that he lobbed out there, essentially accusing Coach K of using the 18 and 19 and under Team USA rosters as recruiting chips and rewarding former players with roster spots in the World Cup team, i.e. Mason Plumlee. So that's a little more serious, but at the same time, the lines are blurred, what he has earned versus manipulating the system. And I will just go ahead and say he's earned it. And I will say that because he continues winning, right? If he just loaded up those teams with Duke players and they were getting silvers and bronzes or not meddling, yeah, then I will hear all of the berserk hot takes in the world. But I'm just going to say it again. I think he's earned it. Now, another interesting story involving collegiate coaching. We reported it. It was broke in the last minute of yesterday's show, shifting gears here to college football, that the Ball coach has signed a TV agent. And a lot of people have speculated that he's going to slide into College Game Day. He would be perfect. I mean, my goodness, wouldn't he be perfect for that?
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible. He has said that nobody has directly contacted him about replacing Lee Corso on Game Day. But he wouldn't rule it out either. I can't decide, though, 843-652-3776, if he would be a good analyst on a broadcast or not. Because he has a really weird speech pattern and way of communicating. And I don't imagine him being a very good analyst, but it could also be in the realm of atypical and very funny, right? Like Bob Knight as a technical broadcaster on a college basketball broadcast, like when he's paired up with Musburger on ESPN, is a horrific analyst. Like, he doesn't know when to cut in, he talks for too long, he's in a bad mood, it seems like he's asleep, like, the entire time. It's just like, really, Bob? Like, did you look over the game notes before this? But at the same time, it's so entertaining because it is Bob Knight, and every once in a while he gets on a soapbox about something, and it's must-watch television. Like, Bill Walton is the weirdest basketball analyst you could ever imagine, but it works because, who knows, he might be high during those games. But he adds an entertainment value, and I just can't tell if Spurrier, as an analyst on a football broadcast, would be complete unmitigated train wreck like Rondé Barber on NFL broadcasts, or if it would be in the Bill Walton, Bob Knight category where it's, okay, this is not classic broadcasting technique, but it enhances the broadcast because it's so weird and delightful at the same time.
I mean, it's just like any trade, I think, could be a little awkward at first, but the entertainment value would be great. I mean, he'd obviously have to practice and learn the skill of being an analyst, but I think it's something he could handle.
I don't know that he would want to. That's the other thing, though. I feel like he would have to prepare a lot more for an actual broadcast where you got to know, you can't be like, oh, that number 18, he's a ball player. I mean, that, you know, you got to know the dude's name. Like, you know, they know, those analysts are watching film and figuring out tendencies and stuff. And I just don't see the ball coach wanting to grind and do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It would kind of put the play-by-play man in a bit of a predicament to figure out how to work around the guy. But if he's just on College Game Day, then he can pull all those stunts and be a really big personality and not really research the games. I mean, people are still going to be entertained no matter what he says. Like, game day is theater, right? People want to watch Lee Corso switch his mask like 50 times, and no one really cares, like, okay, did he have the best analysis on his pick? No, it's pure entertainment. Like, Spurrier can just get up there and say whatever he wants to, and like I said, I mean, Spurrier could read a grocery list, and I would be rolling on the floor laughing. Like, that guy can say anything at any point in time, and I am delightfully entertained by. So I would love to see him in a studio setting. Game day would be perfect, because that's the only really studio setting that I can think of that is pure theater. Like, a lot of the other studio stuff, well, I guess TNT's basketball studio with Barkley, Shaq, Ernie, and Kenny Smith.
Yeah.
That would be another parallel to game day. I mean, I don't know who else they would put in there. What if they put Holtz and Spurrier both? They brought Holtz back. just basically replicated TNT's. Just throw
subtitles.
A bunch of personalities. Yeah, who would be the Ernie Johnson that like plays moderator in that? You'd have to be a really good broadcaster to just control the conversation, but to let those dudes just get back and do what they do.
But even with Kenny and Shaq and Charles, they're all significantly younger. Like, they still have a lot of energy to be doing that kind of stuff. I don't know how much Spurrier still got left in the tank, especially if he's trying to retire or resign or whatever you want to call it.
You didn't see his off-season workout with Josh Kendall of the state, did you? He's still tearing it up in the weight room. See, Spurrier just, he's not a grinder. He wasn't on campus when Nick Chubb showed up. Like, it was never an energy problem with him. He was unwilling to recruit as college football changed around him, and he made a couple of bad hires, and he was unwilling to fire the guys in a sequence of three or four bad decisions and character traits just all blew up in his face. Like, he could still be a very successful college football coach right now if he didn't make his son his recruiting coordinator, if he didn't hire Lorenzo Ward to run his defense and give Lorenzo Ward 110% control to put other bad assistants on his staff like Deke Adams. Like, those two hires right there, I mean, if he still had Ellis Johnson and Brad Long, they would still be a 10-win program right now. And who knows when he would be forced to retire. But he just got caught in a bunch of bad decisions because he also is not a grinder, right? And it's a little bit of a shame because with his media profile, he should be able to just rake in recruits, but that doesn't translate when you're not the person that's personally communicating with recruits, right? Because Spurrier is the greatest trash talker in, like, I think since like Muhammad Ali. I don't think there's been a better trash talker in sports. It's kind of a funny discussion. Anyways, coming up next, Myrtle Beach head coach Mickey Wilson talking about his game with Georgetown tonight, which could decide the Region 7 3A title. Find out what Coach Wilson thinks about his boys' chances tonight. We are back on Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard, and it is time to talk a little high school pigskin. Joining us now on 100.3 The Team is Mickey Wilson, head coach of the 5-3 Myrtle Beach Seahawks. And coach, last time we had a conversation on our Friday night show, you told me that your star running back, a name that a lot of folks around here know, Brandon Sinclair, had 3 punt blocks in a game, and that because of that, you owe him a pizza per punt block. I just want to follow up on that bet. Have all 3 pizzas been purchased?
Absolutely. That was a huge night for him against Wilson, blocking punts, and hopefully he can get a couple tonight as well.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you that just to point out that, I mean, this is a kid that has 1,000 yards rushing on the season, has been an absolute terror for people in the Grand Strand to stop. He's a D1 scholarship running back next year at Old Dominion, and he's also busting his butt in special teams, and I think that's a terrific story.
You know, absolutely. He's a very unselfish kid. He's one of our team leaders, one of our hardest workers. You know, he's one of those guys that he's the first one in the weight room, the last one to leave. And, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes to get wins on the Friday nights. And, you know, he enjoys it. He enjoys being on that punt block team. And he'll certainly do whatever it takes to win.
Now, you guys have won 3 games in a row, Coach, and I know that your early schedule was very difficult, so you guys weren't a 2-3 football team per se when you were 2-3. But now on this 3-game winning streak, it's easy to take a look at Elijah Rice's emergence and say, man, this guy has become a touchdown machine. But what else besides Elijah has been a reason that your team has perhaps turned the corner?
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, going into the season with the guys that we had returning, a lot of those guys were put in new positions. You know, we had a guy like Keontae Sessions who started for us in the secondary, and now all of a sudden he's having to play receiver. And Cortez Brown, same scenario. Chase Brill, who had played defensive end for us, was now playing middle linebacker. You know, anytime you got experience coming back, that's great. But when those guys have to change positions, a lot of times it creates a situation where they're a little uncomfortable at the beginning of the year, and I think now we've got a certain comfort level. We seem to be playing pretty well. And then our new guys that are coming up from our junior varsity program have become comfortable too, and they're starting to figure out what's going on. And, you know, when you're playing football, if you're uncomfortable, it's tough to be really good. And I think our kids are starting to get comfortable, and hopefully that'll continue. And when you see that comfort level on the field, a lot of times you start to see kids make plays and become better.
Now, you guys are kicking off tonight at 7:30 at Doug Shaw Stadium against a very, very good Georgetown team that could perhaps challenge you guys for the region. And what I'm curious about conceptually, Coach, is take me into your practices in a sense of game week, you're facing a good opponent like Georgetown. How much of your practice time is devoted to Georgetown-specific kind of schemes, and how much is, let's make Myrtle Beach better?
Well, I think the most important thing with us, and something we've been really focusing in on, is making ourselves better. You know, continue and fundamentally get better and do the little things well. I mean, and of course, we always, anytime you play a team like Georgetown, you have to prepare for those guys, and they do a tremendous job over there. They have some very good athletes, and, you know, we'll have our hands full tonight, and, you know, we spend a lot of time on, trying to mimic their plays and prepare for those guys, whether it be offense or defense or special teams. And, so, you know, it's about half and half, but the biggest thing with us is, you know, we always try with our guys to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and we're getting better and doing the little things and the fundamentals well.
Myrtle Beach head coach Mickey Wilson joins us right now on Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard. Now, Coach, taking a look at Georgetown, I haven't had a chance to see them yet this year, but Jarvis Brown's 16 passing touchdowns, 10 rushing, I mean, that really, really jumps off the page statistically. What kind of stress does that put on a defense when you have to respect the guy's arm and legs?
Well, yeah, anytime you play a quarterback who's a dual-threat guy, it can be tough. You know, you can't just focus in on stopping one area, one specific thing. So we'll have to do a tremendous job with him. You know, he loves to run the football. He's a runner. He's a hard runner, so we'll have to do a good job of tackling him and swarming to him. And then the other thing is, you know, he can throw the ball down the field and make big plays, so we'll have to do a great job in coverage and making sure that we don't have any bone assignments right now.
Now, Coach, high expectations always at Myrtle Beach. You guys won a state championship just 2 years ago with Drayton Arnold, Brandon Sinclair, some guys that are still on this team. And this is a journey. I know Myrtle Beach teams typically improve throughout the course of the season. But as you sit here, 5-3 overall, 3-0 in the region, where is this team right now relative to perhaps your expectations before the season started?
Well, you know, we play a tough schedule early on, like we talked about earlier. And anytime you do that, you're going to have a chance to get beat. But I think that makes us better. And, you know, the biggest thing with us right now is we're improving. We're getting better. I love this team. I love where they're at. You don't want to peak too early in football. You know, you want to peak come late October and November, and hopefully we'll continue on that path to get to that point where we do start peaking. And, you know, our guys understand, you know, we had a big ball game tonight. We got a chance to play in the next 2 weeks with Georgetown and North Myrtle Beach, a chance to play for a region championship, and that's one of our goals. But the biggest thing is just getting in the playoffs and getting hot and getting better. So.
And you don't have to say it. I'm the media member. I can come out with my opinion here. Those are the two toughest teams in your region. So certainly plenty of work ahead to do for the Myrtle Beach Seahawks. But, Coach, I'm also curious, taking a look at the Georgetown situation, the one region loss that they have this year is because they played, or at least in a week where they had, you know, 3 days' notice, Tuesday and Friday games. As someone, you know, looking at that from afar, obviously you don't coach the Bulldogs. What was your reaction when you found out they were going to have to play two games in the same week?
Well, it makes it tough. You know, we've been in situations before here in the past where, you know, a game will get delayed or rained out, and you have to play a Monday, Friday game, or games, I should say. So it's a tough situation, you know. But any time you're put in that situation, you know, it's a region game, and you have to accept that challenge, and it's a tough challenge. And I know they've had some situations down in Georgetown, just like everywhere in our state, which is very unfortunate. But you know, it can be tough playing two ball games in 1 week for sure. And I know that played into them getting beat by Lake City, but Lake City's a very good football team. We went down there and beat them in overtime, and that says a lot about Lake City as well. So.
You mentioned peaking earlier in our conversation, Coach. What is the biggest concern that you have right now for this team? You know, what facet of the game in terms of getting them to peak at the right time?
Well, I think the biggest thing with us is we have to do a good job of throwing and catching the football. We have to continue to get better at our run blocking so we can open up some holes for Brandon. You know, we've been very balanced this year as far as running pass, and if we can continue on that path, and continue to get better at those things, I think it makes us a lot better because teams have a tough time defending a team that is balanced. And then I think the other thing is defensive. We just got to continue to swarm on defense and make great tackles and continue to get better at tackling.
He is Myrtle Beach head coach Mickey Wilson. They are currently on a three-game winning streak. And tonight, 7:30 kickoff at Doug Shaw Stadium against the Georgetown Bulldogs. If they win tonight, they clinch a share of the Region 7 3A title. So, Coach, best of luck in your boys sharp tonight.
Thank you, Lewis. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
The always good Mickey Wilson. Love the fact that he gets his kids pizzas when they block punts. And there are two things that I've noticed that are always consistent about Myrtle Beach teams, and this is my third year covering high school football in this area. Always excellent on special teams, and that right there explains it, if he's giving kids pizzas when they block punts. And they always, always are better in the second half of the season than the first. So watch out in the 3A playoffs. I mean, that team has some serious personnel. I mean, Drayton Arnold and Brandon Sinclair both have scholarships to go to Old Dominion next year, FBS team. Their receiver, Elijah Rice, is really emerging right now. They're dangerous. I know Aaron picked Georgetown this morning and Pat picked Myrtle Beach. I'll break the tie and vote for the Seahawks tonight. That game's at Doug Shaw Stadium. 7:30 kickoff, probably going to decide the region title. So I'm excited for that. Many other games tonight on Mr. Sparky's Friday Night Wrap-Up. We'll go all across the Grand Strand interviewing coaches and play-by-play broadcasters at each game, keep you updated with the scores, and that takes place right after our Carolina Forest High School play-by-play, which is right here each and every Friday. Coming up next, going to do a little buy or sell involving South Carolina's head coaching vacancy. All due respect to Sean Elliott, all due respect to head coaching vacancy, and it might also involve Peyton Manning's athleticism. That's next on Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. Tried to speak before it was my turn. I was just so ready to tear it up this segment.
That's a false start.
I was speaking over the commercials. I never false started.
I was going to say, isn't that a penalty in track? You should be better at that.
Distance race, bruh. I was never in a hurry to get off the line. Conservative early in the race, Brian. Tear it up later on. Take no risks. Close hard. That's my philosophy. Getting into a little buy or sell right now. I am buying Houston head football coach Tom Herman as a legit head coaching candidate for South Carolina. And a lot of people would look at him, and his Houston squad is tearing it up this year, both in terms of the record and offensive output, and say, well, that guy, he's going to wait around the way that Jim McElwain did and go for a plush Florida-type gig. Maybe he would be already above South Carolina, even though he's already a one-year head coach. And there are two reasons now why I would consider Herman, after 1 year, a legit candidate for South Carolina. I think that that would be a terrific gig for him. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say he's an Ohio guy with no ties to the South and no ties to the area and recruiting, but he, on his radio show today, or earlier in the week, went absolutely berserk criticizing Houston's fans for not showing up to games. And this is his quote. "To me, we're not selling out every home game. I would ask why. What more do you need to see? You need a better product on the field or a more exciting game? I'm confused. When I ask Cougar Nation, why are you not at every home game, I get some really blank stares sometimes because the answer is, coach, I don't have a reason. There isn't a good reason." Wow. That's on the coach's show. The coach's show is a pep rally each and every week that's a side income stream for head coaches. Hearing a head coach, particularly in his first year in a gig, get after the fan base for being apathetic, that is unusual. And if there's one thing about the Gamecock fan base, is it is not apathetic. I mean, I mention this all the time, but in 1998, both teams were 3-17 combined. Clemson, South Carolina, 80,000 people showed up to that game. Both of those programs have incredibly loyal fans. And so if he's feeling like the excellent work he's doing at Houston is unappreciated, if he does that same caliber work at South Carolina, it's not going to be unappreciated. And what did he do a terrific job with when he was at Ohio State? Dual threat quarterback play. Braxton Miller, to a certain extent JT Barrett, to a certain extent Cardale Jones. He was responsible for making sure all three guys were ready to play at a championship level. He's going to have a young, potentially young Lorenzo Nunez. And also, if Brandon McElwain decides to continue to go to South Carolina, if he signs his NLI, that is quite an impressive quarterback collection of talent that he would have to work with right off the bat. So you would have passionate fans. You would have the ability to resurrect a program. Like I said, I think that the fact that they're going to have a bad SEC record this year and a bad record overall, I think that that elevates the job because guys can come in and be a conquering hero and have time to build their program. There's no immediate expectations. The SEC East is wide open right now. I mean, you have no idea how much longer Georgia is going to continue with Mark Richt, because the fans don't love him, and he doesn't really seem to love college football anymore. People say he wants to retire and be a missionary, like dead serious. You hear that from time to time. Butch Jones has proven he can recruit and not manage a clock. McElwain's having a nice first season in Florida, but Will Muschamp's second season was really nice. There's no one program in the East that you can say, okay, that's the bully on the block for the next 10 years. It's a great opportunity for a head coach to come into South Carolina and really try and put his stamp on that side of the conference. And besides, the $4 million that South Carolina can offer is a hell of a lot more than Houston. So I would buy Tom Herman as a legit candidate for South Carolina at this point. And I am going to sell that Peyton Manning can beat Dirk Nowitzki in a 40-yard dash. Dirk said that there was locker room discussion in Dallas about the two of them and who would win in a 40. And Von Miller sees Dirk's tweet and says, Peyton would win by 1.5 yards, and he sets the over-under at 5.7 seconds on a Dirk Nowitzki, Peyton Manning 40-yard dash.
I'm taking over.
I'm taking like a really disgustingly ugly Dirk Nowitzki 5.4 and like a Peyton Manning like 6.8.
6.8. Oh, man.
Peyton's got nothing in the gas tank, man. And they said that playing the Nuggets, the Mavericks are going to be in town a couple of times. They're going to be in Denver a couple of times in the spring, and I believe that Peyton will be retired, so he really has no out here. He can't say, oh, I'm afraid to tear my hamstring for the next football season, because I don't think there's any way he comes back next year, man. He is 10 picks, 7 touchdowns. It's ugly. It's worse to watch than it is to recite the statistics right now. I know he's the important number is 6-0. I mean, man, Gottlieb was on before me, and he was beating the drum for Brock Osweiler to get a shot. He was on the team Osweiler, trying to get this 6'8" hammer arm in there to prove that he's not just another Ryan Mallett. And if he were, man, that defense is good enough. This is almost like watching those Tebow teams win.
Oh.
Like excellent field goal kicking and like crazy defensive miracles, winning games in spite of mediocre
and a quarterback that
play.
Can't throw.
Yeah. Fluttering balls, I think, is the word that we used on this program. Ian Guerin hits me up. He heard my commentary and trying to jump the intro song. Like, I tried to start talking before it was my turn. And Ian writes, premature pronunciation. That's pretty good. I can't do better than that myself. Well played, Ian. Ian, one of our rock star guests on Mr. Sparky's Friday Night Wrap-Up to listen to later on. Now, Buy or Sell is brought to you by Philanthropist.com, helping people get great domain names. Exact Match domains receive more traffic, easier recognition, and are better positioned in search results. Philanthropist.com is loaded with Exact Match domains, particularly for local businesses that can really help your company thrive. Philanthropist.com. Now, Coastal Carolina is taking on Monmouth tomorrow, a 1 p.m. kickoff, and we will have that broadcast right here. Joe Cashin is back in the broadcast booth after helping out with the floods. Always great to have Joe back, and always appreciate his service. So that'll be fun to hear that call. And I'll be hosting the Bojangles Ultimate Tailgate Experience tomorrow live from the warehouse in downtown Conway. So if you want to hang out, watch the game with me after the broadcast, I'll be out there watching the game. It's on ESPN3, so they'll have it up there on a couple of their TVs. And yeah, I'll be hanging out at the warehouse bar. So coverage of the Chanticleers, number one in the country, FCS, at Monmouth in New Jersey. That starts tomorrow at 10 a.m. on this radio station. Have a sit-down with Coach Joe Moglia. And we talk about things that his offense can do to get back on track. Personally, I think it's all about Alex running the football more. I think if Alex is healthy, he's only averaging 15 yards rushing a game. He averaged like 50 last year. So if he's able to run the ball and teams have to respect Alex Ross's run, I think that's going to help the offense explode. But that also depends on Alex's ankle being good to go and him respecting the opponents enough to risk it. That's another thing. All right, Sports Talk's coming up next. Corn Blue McCreary. Stay right here for the latest in South Carolina sports.